This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Hello. My name is Dr. Bonnie Burstow. I'm a faculty person at University of Toronto. I'm a psychotherapist, a trauma specialist, and a U of T researcher who's written extensively on ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. We are here today, to announce the birth of a new organization, Healthcare Professionals Against Electroshock Speakers Bureau. We have speakers throughout Canada. We have therapists, we have nurses, we have doctors. We have international consultants, including a psychiatrist who may be one of the foremost names in research on electroshock. The purpose of this organization is to educate people about electroshock, but the even bigger purpose is, through education, to work for its abolition. We are doing this because, as professionals, we know that this is an essentially damaging procedure, a brain-damaging procedure, a procedure that wipes out whole skills, huge aspects of memory. We know this from studies like Sackheim, 2007, who have proven conclusively that electroshock in all its forms is essentially a brain-damaging procedure. Now, psychiatry likes to say otherwise. They like to say, no, new improved electroshock, modified electroshock is okay. We would like to inform the public that modified shock has been going on since approximately 1959. And almost all the studies we're talking about that show brain damaging is on modified shock. And the Sackheim study shows conclusively it's brain damaging for all types of shock. So we know also that it's not effective. That there have been numerous studies that show it has no effectiveness beyond a month over placebo, and some of the studies show it has no effectiveness beyond 3 days. Can you imagine brain damaging people for life for a treatment that isn't effective? That's what we're facing here. We also know this more personally as professionals, as people who have worked with clients who have been damaged by this treatment, by people who have allied with people who've been damaged by this treatment, who can't work on their therapeutic issues because they can't remember what's bothering them, but they surely do know that they're being bothered. Our emergence on the scene is a new feature. It is a new happening. There have been certainly professionals who've spoken out against electroshock before. This is the first time in history a group has come together of healthcare professionals saying our purpose is to end this treatment. We are coming together because we see this treatment as unethical. Moreover, and this is really important, we see it as our professional obligation to speak out against this treatment. We see not speaking out as a violation of our obligation of care as professionals. Whether it be professionals as therapists, which I am, as nurses, which Adam is, as therapists, which Tara is. We also would like to go on record as saying that the administering of ECT, which psychiatry does, is in direct violation of the doctor's Hippocratic Oath, which every doctor takes. Whatever house I go into, first I will do no harm. Primum nil nocere. This is harm. This is a direct violation of that oath. We know that the official position of psychiatry is it is safe and effective. We are here to tell you that studies show otherwise. We are here to tell you that the enormous damage done to our clients shows otherwise. We know people who have never remembered their children again after electroshock, people who have 4 to 10 years wiped out of their existence, many, many people who can no longer carry down normal jobs because they do not have the skills necessary to do it anymore. The situation facing us today is very like the situation that was facing professionals in the 70s around lobotomy. In the 1970s, lobotomy started making a huge comeback. And guess what psychiatrists said? They said, there's no problem with lobotomies. It is safe and effective. It is not a damaging treatment. Fortunately, there were practitioners, including psychiatrists, who knew better and who had the guts to speak out. And they did speak out. They arranged, you know, they came together and they spoke out, and they spoke out in country after country until lobotomies essentially, for the most part, became a thing of the past. We put psychiatry on notice today. We intend to do with electroshock what our colleagues did with lobotomies in the 70s. We intend to speak out against it we intend to tell the truth about it. We intend to expose the misinformation, and we would like to say lies about it, so that this treatment also, just like lobotomy was, gets consigned to the dustbin of history. We would like to take this opportunity also to invite other professionals to join us. You know, I've heard from many professionals, you know, there's a fair degree of silence about electroshock, but it's not because other professionals don't know. It's because they know and they're not supposed to talk about it. I've heard from many professionals, including nurses and including doctors, who have told me, we would like to join you, but we are scared to join you because if we join you, we could get fired and we don't want to lose our job. Can you imagine getting fired for telling the truth about damage? Now, if this doesn't constitute a violation of Hippocratic Oath, what does? What my invitation is for people today in that situation, whether you're nurses, whether you're doctors, whatever, join us anyway. Join us anyway because it is the right thing to do. Join us anyway because the more people that join us, the sooner we get rid of this essentially damaging and really unacceptable treatment. Join us anyway, and this I can promise you, if any action is taken against you, we will be there in that fight also. We will stand up with you. Thank you, and I would like to introduce the second speaker. The second speaker is Simon Adam, and Simon is a nurse and a nurse educator and a doctoral student.
Thank you, Bonnie. I joined this group because I have the same concerns as the ones you just heard from Bonnie. As a nurse, I came into this group with a particular perspective and a certain urge. First of all, out of a moral commitment to my patients and to their loved ones, I speak out against electroshock. I break the silence that psychiatry has superimposed on us, and I speak against this horrific intervention. After a long period of moral distress, distress that I'm sure many nurses out there feel about ECT, I came out against it. I have reviewed the pro-ECT literature, and it paints a flawed picture of the intervention. It depicts it as a safe treatment when it is not even remotely so. I know people who have received ECT, and they tell a very different story. They tell a story of pain, of a tragic loss, a story of memory loss and chronic seizure problems, cognitive effects, essentially brain damage, and in many cases, irreversible brain damage. The Code of Ethics for Nurses tells us, nursing ethics is concerned with how broad societal issues affect health and well-being. This means that nurses endeavor to maintain awareness of aspects of social justice that affect health and well-being and advocate for change. Nurses advocate for persons in their care if they believe that the health of those persons is being compromised by factors beyond their control, including the decision-making of others. Furthermore, nurses intervene and report when necessary, when others fail to respect the dignity of a person receiving care. Recognizing that to be silent and passive is to condone such behavior. Nurses should endeavor as much as possible individually and collectively to advocate for changes to unethical health and social policies, legislation, and regulations. Speaking out against ECT and working towards its end is about dignity. It is about recognizing that as long as the intervention continues, people cannot have a dignified existence, and our patients will continue to be manipulated, coerced, and damaged. The Code of Ethics defines being compassionate as having the ability to convey in speech and in body language the hope and intent to relieve the suffering of another. Compassion is a relational process, it says, that involves noticing another person's pain, experiencing an emotional reaction to that pain, and acting in some way to help reduce it or eliminate it. My fellow nurses, I have seen people in pain from ECT, and I have recognized it, and that pain has awakened my compassion, and that is what brings me here today. To act with integrity, to sustain one's wholeness and moral autonomy, is to tap into our nursing compassion. Let us mobilize to end ECT. We only continue to violate our own professional integrity when we sit here in silence. Until nurses awaken their compassion and break the silence, challenge its underlying institutional power, we will remain to practice with a compromised sense of integrity. I would invite you to go beyond our code and beyond its reliance on a flawed idea of capacity and consent. I would urge you to examine the moral courage you, my fellow nurses, I know you have, and add to my voice. Let's break the silence together. Let's end ECT. Thank you. I'd like to hand off to Tara Defoe, our next speaker. Tara is a therapist and she's a psychology PhD student.
Thank you, Simon. I'd like to take a minute today to speak to you about what it means in therapy to work with someone who is a survivor of ECT. What we know about ECT is that ECT is a trauma, much like other traumas we traditionally associate with a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, with serious and significant cognitive and emotional effects, some of which have been mentioned, including memory loss, confusion, inability to describe your own experience, flashbacks, hopelessness, etc. The list goes on. ECT is unique as a trauma, as it is compounded upon by the serious and significant brain damaging effects my colleagues have spoken about. What we must also keep in mind is that when working with survivors, we have to keep in mind that they are likely to be left with a deep distrust and fear of us as healthcare professionals, who in their time of need and vulnerability, instead of helping, we harmed. When we look to the psychological code of ethics, we can see how ECT as a treatment is in violation of, at the very least, the two most important principles: respect for the dignity of persons and responsible caring. Within the code, there is a 10-step process that we are expected to follow in order to help us make difficult ethical decisions. Step 5, for example, states, we need to analyze the likely short-term, ongoing, and long-term risks and benefits of each course of action, or therapy, on the individual, but not only the individual, others likely to be affected, for example, our clients' family members. However, I don't feel that this is translated, as most survivors I know were never informed of the seriousness of the brain-damaging effects that would follow, the years of their lives that may be erased, or the impact ECT might have on their family members. I think of another survivor whose husband experienced heart failure after signing the consent form and watching his wife undergo ECT. Nor were they informed about how their ability to function and live in the world might be compromised. Again, I think of another survivor who mourns the loss of the scholar he would have become, who after ECT can no longer concentrate or put pen to paper as he once could. And in the code, it states that throughout our entire decision-making process, we are expected as professionals to engage in a process that is explicit enough to bear public scrutiny. However, again, I'm not confident that the public knows about ECT. I think back to MPP Sherry DeNovo's private members bill in May 2010 to defund electroshock therapy here in Toronto, Ontario. And when Sherry was speaking, she mentioned that in her experiences, the public is shocked to learn that electroshock is still happening. What's more, shocked that it's still covered by OHIP, at a time when eye exams and physical therapy are not. Well, MPP Sherry DeNovo's bill died on the order table. This does not suggest for a second that this issue is dead. and we encourage other provinces to follow Sherry's lead. In closing, I'd like to bring your attention briefly to step 10 of our ethical decision-making process, which states that we must take appropriate action when warranted and feasible to prevent future occurrences of the dilemma in question, in this case, ECT, through communication with our colleagues and changes in procedures and practices, to name only two. The appropriate action here is to be educated about the damaging effects of ECT and to speak out and support one another, both personally and professionally, so that our policies and practices do change. As therapists and psychologists, we're in the helping, not harming profession, as all healthcare professionals are. And it's essential that our ethics, practices, and values reflect that. ECT is not helpful. It's trauma induced by the hands of those who were entrusted to help. As therapists and healthcare professionals, it's our responsibility to speak out at every opportunity, again and again, until the horror of ECT is no more. I invite all other therapists who feel similarly to please speak out and to join us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tara. We'll take questions. I think that's you.
Bonnie, you've been fighting this fight for a long time now. What will the formation of this group do differently than what you've been doing in the past in your efforts to ban electroshock?
What we haven't had in the past is a group, an organization of professionals for whom this is their mandate. And that's, you know, and we haven't had it, not only not in Canada, we haven't had it anywhere in the world. And so what it's saying is when the press go to talk to find out about electroshock, so they may do what they consider even-handed. They will interview a survivor that is aware that this profoundly damaged them, and one who says it saved their life. Okay, they'll do that. And then they'll interview the psychiatrist. And if they happen to interview anyone else, it'll be an activist, but the expert will be the psychiatrist. We are posing this different. We are saying that we, as healthcare professionals, are experts. We have an organization, and we need to be heard on this issue. Again, the situation with lobotomy is very significant. People did form groups, and they did get something taken away when the lobotomizing psychiatrists were very clear and were, for a long time, the only voice heard on this. We are changing that. We are saying the voice of professionals who are saying this is unacceptable, this is now a reality and can't be ignored.
Is this group international in scope?
No, this group is only Canadian for the actual speakers, but we have international consultants, and we're in correspondence with international people. In fact, I'm going to be interviewed by Bregan on the radio tonight, and Bregan's a psychiatrist, states he's one of our consultants. And the attempt is going to be, is as we get traction here, we're going to try to encourage our colleagues in other countries to form similar organizations so that we have organizations in one country after another of healthcare professionals saying this treatment has got to go. And so that's our strategy, and that's a very new strategy.
What's both the federal and the provincial government's position on
Health is a provincial issue. So the position of the various provinces in Canada is they cover it, right? Like they cover everything else. There's two ways this can disappear. There's three ways this can disappear, actually. The insurance can stop covering it. If the insurance stops covering it, I assure you, pretty soon no one will be having it, because it'll then be elective that people pay for, and I don't think very many people would seek it out on their own. It could be by legislation decided this couldn't happen, and so both of that could come from the government, Or it could become so unpopular that psychiatrists would lose their reputation by, and psychiatry stopped doing it. And, you know, to a degree, a mixture of those happened with lobotomy throughout the years, you know, throughout the different countries. And so we're looking at that as a model. I'm using the lobotomy example very purposefully because I remember that fight, and I remember hearing psychiatrists after psychiatrists saying it's safe and effective, and I remember some of the same people who were saying that then are among the shock promoters now. So we're dealing with some of the same people. We're also dealing with some of the same people who are opposing it. Peter Bregan was one of the big figures against lobotomy, and he's part of our, you know, he's part of our greater organization speaking out against electroshock.
You've been pushing the Ontario government, though, for a long time to eliminate ECT. What is their response to you as to why they still allow it to happen?
Governments don't tend to respond to you. You know, I mean, this is governments are not highly responsive organizations. Mostly they ignore you. What's going to happen is we, by virtue of having organizations eventually in different countries, are going to make it impossible for the government not to respond. And that's the situation that we see that's going to change. And we know it's going to take work, but this is step one, and we're in here for the long haul. And again, this strategy worked with lobotomy, so this is not an untested strategy.
Simon, you're a nurse. What is the response of the Ontario Nurses Association with regards to shock therapy?
ONA hasn't responded. To my knowledge, the Ontario Nurses Association hasn't responded to this issue. Now, the Ontario Nurses Association is the union for nurses. And they wouldn't necessarily have any position, political or otherwise, about shock.
What about the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario?
The RNAO is very much mainstream, is very much on side of psychiatry. Of course, they, you know, they've published the best practice guidelines, and so they there is a pro ECT bias in the literature that the RNAO borrows from and publishes to enhance practice, if you will, but. It endorses ECT.
And what's the response from in general from your nursing colleagues? How do they feel about the whole procedure themselves?
I would say they're uneasy about it. You know, I remember a conversation I had with an emergency psychiatry nurse, and ECT came up in our discussion, and her reaction was almost that of a shudder, and she says, you know, I'm not a fan of ECT, which is very interesting because she's a psychiatry nurse and she, you know, that's her specialty. And she, I would imagine she would have helped administer ECT. And so, many nurses feel the way I do. They're just afraid to come out and speak for some of the same reasons that Bonnie mentioned earlier.
Tara, you're a therapist. What's the position of the association that represents therapists?
Well, being in psychology and as a psychology student, psychology is always subordinate to psychiatry. And so psychiatry holds the rein in regards to treatments and therapies, and those are the therapies that are funded, et cetera. So realistically, sort of psychiatry holds all the power there. In speaking to various therapists and psychologists, I'm actually quite surprised that people aren't as aware that ECT is happening. So part of my desire to join in this group and to speak out as a therapist and as someone who's studying psychology is to make that more of an issue within psychology in general so that other psychologists are speaking about it and so that it becomes a bigger issue and so that there is more of a position to be had on the matter.
What's the cost roughly of this procedure and how many procedures are taking place in Ontario on a yearly basis on average?
I can't, you know, I can't give you the answer to that offhand, but, you know, if I looked into it, you know...
As far as you're concerned, one is too many, but...
And it's not even the issue for me. So let me be clear. If this were a safe and effective treatment, I wouldn't care what it costs. I care, I care that it's damaging people's lives, and the cost to me is a non-issue, which is probably why I don't pay any attention to the figures.
But you, roughly how many people would be undergoing this procedure on a yearly basis?
I think it's about 20, 30,000, is that right? Mm-hmm. About 20, 30,000.
In Ontario or in Canada?
in Ontario.
20 or 30,000?
No, 20 or 30,000 treatments, not people. Sorry.
Okay. What about the machines that are used for ECT? What kind of standards are there? Who's the manufacturer?
The machines are an interesting phenomenon. They haven't been certified as safe. So there's a problem. Again, it's not what I focus on, but some people do because they haven't been. A even more serious problem for me is conflict of interest, because the biggest shock promoters, the ones who create the statements about them being safe and effective, the ones who create videos in which they talk about how safe and effective they are, also own the shock machines. So to me, that's the major issue. That's the major issue. That this is an industry totally tied up in conflict of interest. And so you cannot believe, things they say, because there's a monetary motive here. And so it's not how much money they make from the treatment, it's how much money they make from the shock machines, right? That's the big issue. And Abrams, which is, I believe was shown made approximately 50% of his income from the shock machines, right? Who's one of the biggest shock promoters. And, so the conflicts of interest are mammoth in psychiatry generally, but especially in shock. They're actually, in many ways, as big in psychiatric drugs because, they give money for conferences and so on, and they fund things, and they fund, research that shows that their drugs are safe and effective, right? So this is an industry enormously tied up in conflicts of interest, and that's what I think we need to pay attention to. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, John. For Rabble.ca, this is John Bonner. Thank you for listening to John Bonner's audio blog, hosted by Rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network.